You are listening to episode number 128 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Yoo-hoo!
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square in the frosty air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode number 128 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I am your host, Iggy, as always, a.k.a. Ben. I may be drinking a little bit, but who gives a flying fuck? Joining me tonight, the man who should move to sunny Southern California and then eventually go to WonderCon with me, Mr. Arnold Alfred. Arnold, welcome to the show.
Yo.
And, of course, the man whose New England team lost to the 49ers last night, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome to the show.
Man, why you got to throw that shit in my face?
Why do you pass on 4th-and-1? Why do you do that?
Excuse me, he's pre-gaming for the supposed apocalypse coming up this Friday, folks.
Whatever. Brady has two consecutive losses in the Super Bowl. Not so much Joe Montana anymore, is he anymore?
Yeah, uh-huh. And meanwhile, fuck you, Ben.
Okay. Anyways, so we are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. We are a weekly Marvel podcast dedicated to all things Marvel and whatever the hell we feel like it, including football. So, just in case you haven't been listening for the last couple of weeks, this is our last show of 2012. The year 2012 is officially over. It's been this year, you know, we celebrated our 100th episode and me picking Moon Knight as our book of the week and how much of a shit fest that was. Lord knows that was entertaining. and, you know, just before we start all the whole hubbub, let's get the, thank all Gamma and Spider-Lander for holding the torches, still listening to us. And I'm pretty sure the other people out there, you know, for another strong and even stronger year this year. You know, a lot of interesting books, had a lot of great moments on the show. You have anything to say about the year 2012 for us, guys? It'd be self-congratulatory.
No, you covered it. It was good times. I don't think I missed as many good shows this year.
No, Brian did. Brian missed that record this year.
Does he really?
I think he does. I believe he does.
No, it's been lots of good times. There have been some hysterical fucking episodes this year.
Maybe next year we'll be able to do like live con shows Yeah, that would be, since I'm going out to WonderCon and Arnold always holds the fort at New York and of course he does go to San Diego, you know, hopefully we'll be able to do that. But let's kick it off with the news. B-Rye, what's first on the objective?
First on the agenda is kind of a prank, or not so much a prank as much as a calling out of DC Comics. For those of you who don't know, the Distinguished Competition has planning to launch a new series, I should say, Justice League of America, in which they plan to release 52 variant covers, one for each state flag, and it's been approached as kind of being, you know, like a cheap Photoshop job, etc., etc. And so Marvel, being the more grounded company that they are, had decided to poke a little bit of fun at this. Stuart Immonen has designed a variant cover to Uncanny X-Men number 1, in which the 52 state birds, plus the bald eagle, the national symbol, are all crapping on Deadpool. And I don't mean figuratively, I mean they are literally shitting on Deadpool. And I must say, it's pretty fucking hilarious. Along with the press release for the cover being announced. It says, quote, "That's like 52 plus 1 state variants for the price of 1. Real subtle, guys. And it's really just a funny piece. I mean, if you look at the cover, I assume we're all looking at it right now. I mean, Jesus Christ. That is a lot of crap. I
wonder how long that took for Immonen to draw.
Yeah, really. He had to look up every single state bird and just been like, hey.
Oh, and them all in there.
Where's the mockingbird? Where's the state bird of Texas? I don't see it.
What is the state bird of Texas?
Mockingbird.
What does that look like?
There it is. I see it. It's right above some green bird. I see it. It's a very tiny bird. Which is ironic considering everything's bigger in Texas, but whatever.
Yeah, I know. You guys are one of the smallest state birds. And
and our state tree is a palm tree, believe it or not.
That's just fucking hilarious.
Not even, and we can't even claim the cacti because that's like Arizona, New Mexico territory, but whatever.
Yeah, really. And yeah, there was a quote here from senior editor Nick Lowe. Says, ornithology is one of America's greatest pastimes. With Inauguration Day in spring just around the corner, we could think of no better way to celebrate our history with a beaked representative from every state, including Puerto Rico, and then some.
First off, the DC whole Justice League of America 52 variant covers, where each, that's cool. Like, I will be actively trying to buy the Justice League of America number one cover with the Texas flag on it.
I'll probably go in for the mass one.
Well, that's because you live in a shitty state. Whereas,
yeah, fuck you too, Mr. Redneck.
Whereas, you know, maybe it's just cultural differences, but like, you know, I grew up here, Texas Pride and all that stuff. But I would love to have a Justice League of America cover or something of it that has the Texas State flag on it. That's just awesome to me. I'll be sure to wear my cowboy boots and my cowboy hat on the way to the store that day.
Yay. Stereotype.
I'm part of the village people. Arnold, what about you? Do you think this is a fun idea, as always, with Deadpool covers?
Yeah, I thought it was great. And, of course, who better to do it with but an issue of Deadpool? I couldn't see it working with anybody else, to be completely honest. And the fact that they drew it with him quite literally just with birds crapping on Deadpool, like, and it just fits so well. It's the perfect character for it. I think it's funny and amusing, and I don't see the reason to get all up in arms or pissy about it. Like, you know,
I don't think anybody's up in arms about it. It's just, you know, just kind of poking fun at the bear, you know. I've been like, hey.
This isn't the first time. Remember they said if you ripped off Blackest Night covers, you could get the ultra-rare Siege cover of Deadpool? Right.
Which that, I think, was a little extreme. But this is nice and funny, and, you know, it's not really hurting anyone. It's just a nice little jab for fun's sake, you know. Too bad it didn't land around, like, April Fool's or Halloween time would have been the perfect kind of issue, a perfect time to come out with something like that. But I think it's funny.
Oh, it's definitely funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think I'll buy the cover. It'll be like a nice background poster. I mean, Deadpool this year alone has had, you know, he has already had two very great variant covers in the Uncanny Avengers one, like Why Should I Be an Avenger? And the Unimpressed Deadpool is Unimpressed.
Yeah.
Like that was, I didn't even know that, like, I knew, like, that was a great one. So this is just another great one, you know. If you're a person who thinks, like, oh, Marvel, fuck, once again, being juvenile to DC, like, you know, I kind of wish DC would do more stuff, like, poke fun at themselves or poke fun at Marvel. Lord knows, I wouldn't get upset at it. I would find it humorous because, you know, we all like all kinds of comics.
Absolutely.
So, you know, the more they do this, they just, DC just more proves that they are the white collar, stick to business, I'm going to run my work staff into the ground, and I'm going to be a dick editor, you know, kind of stereotype that they have. And Marvel is the more free-loving, and we're going to let our people do whatever they want, and, you know.
They're the kind of guys you could have a beer with. And
yeah, exactly.
Cool with.
Yeah. I've met both of them. Joe Quesada is a guy you could sit down at a bar. If you didn't know, he was Joe Quesada, editor, former editor-chief of Marvel Comics. Isn't he the COO now?
Chief Creative Officer, or some shit like that.
Well, that's Jeff Johnson's title at DC. I've met him, and he's a cool guy. I've also met Dan DiDio. The guy is, like, constant, and maybe it's because of the position of he is as publisher, you know, that he's a little bit, like, tense every time he talks. Like, it's hard to get a sense, like, I don't think I want to hang out with you after this. So, you know.
Well, you got to figure a guy who's killed 2 dozen-plus characters over the course of his tenure, you know. It's kind of like, probably not a sunshiny guy. Just saying.
He's great, but, you know, I'd rather hang out with Joe Quesada. So, yes. All right, anything else to say on this little minute subject, guys? Will y'all be getting the variant cover?
I probably will, because I'm that guy.
What was that, Arnold?
I probably won't. Not that it's bad or anything. I just, you know, it's not a variant. I'm really all that crazy about.
If it's cover price, I'll get it. That's for sure.
There's that, too. I mean, yeah. You know. And it depends on what's left on the stand. Sometimes the most random of covers are left on my comic book shelf sometimes. So if that's all that's left, that's all that's left. But. Yeah.
All right. Well, Let's move on to last week. We it was official that Electro was going to be played by Academy Award winner Jamie Foxx, who is going to be in the upcoming movie Django Unchained, releasing in Christmas.
It's Django. The G is silent.
Django?
The D is silent.
Django? Oh, so it's just Django Unchained.
Yeah.
Okay. Releasing in theaters Christmas Day. Anyways, he's going to be playing Electro in The Amazing Spider-Man 2, as we covered in last week's show. But Brian this time actually brought us some details. He did research Collider. So let's go.
Well, it was an interview done with Jamie Foxx after the news had been confirmed. And we pretty much just get little tidbits here and there about the kind of Electro we will be seeing portrayed in Mark Webb's sequel to Amazing Spider-Man. What we kind of get is pretty much what we thought about, you know, last week. It's pretty much this is going to be like a blue-collar guy who's kind of been, you know, just kind of, you know, shit on his whole life, you know. There's a quote here. You'll see his whole life is just no one is talking to him. People have stolen his ideas at the company, and he's a nobody. And then there's a certain aspect of it, a certain point made where apparently Spider-Man actually bumps into this guy and for some reason makes him like an informant or something on the street, I guess, that's the best I can take away from what Jamie Foxx says. So he actually starts out as an ally of Spider-Man, or so it would seem. And then one tragedy leads to another, and eventually he gains his powers and... well, he goes bonkers. And also, some sad news to report to Benny Boy. Yeah, they're not doing the classic green and yellow Electro costume.
Boo!
Sorry, buddy. No face mask for you. No Mardi Gras going on.
But they have Electro to satisfy that hunger.
They have released... he has mentioned some bits. Like, apparently they're trying out some new things, like a liquid rubber and things like that, and there are all these bolts and stuff in my arms, and when they're hanging me upside down, and a whole bunch of other crazy
stuff. So that means he's gonna fly?
I don't think so, but I just, you know...
it'd be cool to see Electro fly, you know, or at least, like how he would do in some, like... in
well, yeah, I was gonna say, he's never really flew, but he's definitely, like...
I don't know if you've played Infamous, but like he wouldn't fly, but like he could use the electricity
right.
to keep
but,
him.
But yeah, no, Electro's done stuff like that in the comics and in various video games and cartoons as well. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I would also like to see, go ahead.
Go ahead.
It's just there was one other thing mentioned. The same article was discussed over at comicvine.com, and someone pointed out that the reference to liquid rubber sounds suspiciously like a symbiote in that, remember, in the Ultimate Universe, it wasn't an alien. It was created in a laboratory. So we could be looking at some sort of, you know, substance or something or other that you know, Max Dillon gets a hold of, but becomes something else along the way. So this could be a look at something along the lines of a symbiote that we're dealing with here.
Wait, what?
Well, in the interview, right, they say the reference to, like, liquid rubber and stuff. Okay. And it's a scientific experiment, obviously. But what they're saying is...
Sony, like, really wants that Venom character to get off the ground, don't they?
Well, yeah. Venom's a very popular character.
Yeah, I get that, but...
No, it's just, yeah, because it wasn't it wasn't an alien in the Ultimates. It was a lab experiment. So, yeah, just throwing that out there, you know.
All right, well, I mean, am I disappointed that they're not doing the typical costume? Yes.
You wanted the yellow booties and the...
I would have at least liked the Marvel Ultimate Alliance version where it's like the yellow and the green. I want color. You know, yeah. Like, because if it's black, is it... let's say it was going
to
be black.
Well, yeah, they're continuing to lean into the Ultimate Universe of things.
Yeah.
His costume was very simple. Like, it looked almost like... almost trench coat-like, but it was a kind of flowing top. And then the neck itself, the neck was kind of cut / ripped to resemble a lightning bolt shape, and he was bald, and that was about it. Like, his costume was...
well, I mean, also, he
black.
Was, like, all electrical, like, at some point, wasn't he? Like, he was
say
all,
like... yeah, his entire body was just, like, a living lightning bolt, almost.
Then, and, yeah, you've got the spectacular Spider-Man version where he was just all
in
lightning.
In a containment suit.
Inside a containment suit.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
which
for me...
still green and yellow. It still had some elements of green and yellow in it. It was just heavily muted. You know, it wasn't as bright as the regular costume is, or the, you know, like the 90s cartoon costume, but it was still in there in some fashion.
Well, of course. I mean, for me, it's all about color. You know, I like color. You know,
especially in the Spider-Man universe.
You know, it's like, Spider-Man has a cool costume, but it's very, especially the palette that he chose for the movie, it's very muted.
Yeah.
It's not a bright red like the Tobey Maguire one is. It's a very dull red.
Even that one wasn't that bright. I mean, it had its bright spots.
Yeah, maybe it's because they shot more in the day with Tobey Spider-Man, but
perhaps that's true.
But I just want that contrast of colors, like right. Of just that you know immediately when Electro is gonna be on the screen. Obviously, you're gonna know it's gonna be Electro because it's Jamie Foxx playing Electro. But I don't know. That's just a personal preference for me. I'm sure Jamie's gonna do a great job as Electro. I'm not gonna say Max Dillon because I don't know if that's the name they're gonna go with.
Yeah, they haven't said yet. I don't think.
Which ultimately doesn't really matter because nobody remembers Electro for Max Dillon. They just remember Lightning Dude who shoots things.
I think they'll still go with Max of some sort.
No, they definitely confirmed they're using Max. Just they're not sure if they want to go the Dillon route, which I don't really get the point of that. I mean, that's like just nitpicking.
As long as they don't go like, let's give him a black stereotypical name.
Yeah.
Trayshawn.
Oh, for God's sakes, man.
I know a guy named Trayshawn, yes.
Oh, God. Gee, oh, you don't need that.
All right. Well, anyways.
Like I said, it'll help. His classic costume and color scheme will probably end up being like the logo of his company or some shit. You'll end up seeing like the five-prong lightning bolt star.
When the game comes out, it'll be an unlockable costume or something.
Maybe.
I don't know. Because you know they're going to do an Amazing Spider-Man video game, too.
Of course.
Anyways, so let's move on to, I think, is that it? Is there any more news, guys?
Nothing really important. I mean, nothing really pertinent to talk about, except there was a bit of news this week. Just kind of worth mentioning that, you know, Ian McKellen's been in prostate cancer and stuff, but that's been debunked and then rebunked, and so it's all kind of up in the air. But yeah, I think whichever way that leans, you know, Ian McKellen, dude.
Let's stop posting shit that's not real. God damn it.
I know. People are stupid. But, yeah, Ian McKellen, even if you are battling cancer or not, thoughts and prayers with you, dude.
Yeah, yes. And I didn't do it at the top of the show because I kind of didn't want to, but I guess we have to. But I don't want it to be real. The whole shooting in Connecticut this past Friday, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I'm gonna say is you know, just thoughts and prayers, and that it's horrible that psychos and I don't even know. I don't care what the guy's deal was. Point is, what he did was evil and wrong. And, you know, those kids didn't deserve a damn thing happened to them like that, especially this time of the year. So, you know, just thoughts and prayers. I don't know if y'all have anything to say on the subject, but.
Not too much. I mean, I'm seeing a lot, but the more and more I read about it and focus on it, the angrier it makes me. So I'm trying to, like, stay away from all the news of it.
Yeah.
Like that. I read, like, the kids' names and things like that and all those kinds of things.
I didn't even go that far. I was like, this is too heartbreaking.
People have been like, I've been hearing some people who are like, dude, they sit and watch the news about it for like 2, 3, 4 hours. I'm like, I can't
no,
do it.
No, that's...
And I'm the kind of person, I even like mentioned it on Facebook at some point, I find humor in practically everything, you know, every single thing. This one, there isn't any, in any way, shape, or form. Like, you can't find humor. There's nothing going on, and all that hits me, like you said, is around it's Christmas time, you know, that's the last thing that should be going on around Christmas. This is terrible. Like, half these kids, imagine how many like presents were bought and shit like that.
Yeah, you know, it's like
bad thing.
Well, what pisses me off it more than that, like, just obsessed being this innocent loss of life is this bullshit, you know. What's Obama gonna do about gun control? You know,
oh, of course. Like, it always looks...
You
always,
know, it's like, it's, really? Yeah. Do we have to have this discussion right fucking now, you assholes?
I'm surprised they didn't do it right at the fucking memorial service, the way that this country operates.
Well,
can you believe they televised that, too? They televised the fucking...
Yeah, that's another thing I was upset about.
That's
like,
really? You know, I mean... I don't want to... The fucking media in general is just like... Everybody's a fucking celebrity. I mean, everybody, even if you don't want to be, but if something happens to you, you're automatically a celebrity for 15 minutes, and it will do everything in their grasp to milk you, whether you want them or not. And it's, oh my God. Like, the media handle it, the way the media's handle it, all across, whether they're liberal or conservative or just plain hipsters, you know, it's been horrible, and just like, you know, I like, how can you call yourself journalist? Although I've been saying that for the past 8 years now, of some stuff they said. But anyways, that got too heavy real quick. So let's move on to some. Oh God, that's a horrible transition to a terrorist.
Yeah,
team.
Really, it is.
That's it's horrible. God.
Terrorist to terrorists. Hey.
Damn it. Well, anyways, we move on to our book of the week, the final book of the week chosen for 2012, with. Obviously, Uncanny X-Force is ending this week. And two X-Force books will be coming out of that, which the first one is released now with Cable and the X-Force. It's not called that. It's called Cable and the X-Force, but I'm going to call it Cable and the X-Force. So Cable and the X-Force, number one, written by Dennis Hopeless, art by longtime Iron Man artist Salvador LaRocca. Did any of y'all read Team 7 from DC this year?
I did not.
I picked up like the Zero issue in the first one, but that was about it.
Okay, so did I. Now, for me, the reason I picked up that book was because it was big guns and big tech. I want a book like that. For some reason, I wanted to read that. I have the first couple of issues of Rob Liefeld's X-Force from 1991. And while the art's not exactly great, I do like it. And to me, it's been a struggle to find that book that fits that big tech, big gun need. And I picked this up because I only had like three other books, and I haven't had a week like that, so I figured I might as well try it on this one. And I gotta say, Dennis Hopeless, as much as his name doesn't imply great hope, and I tried it, and I really liked it. I thought this was, you know, nothing extraordinarily happened. You know, it was a lot of getting the team together. My favorite parts being the Domino part of her just walking and describing the mission to, I believe she's talking to Cable in that sense.
I think she's talking to Boom Boom.
Boom Boom? Is it Boom Boom? Okay, I could.
Yeah, because she says, there's a line somewhere in there, she says on one of the pages, she's like, Boom, hold on a second. Or Boom, let me call you back.
Well, she's talking to Boom Boom, and she's basically like describing the mission, and she's like, it's like how it's all this and that and this and like, oh, piece of cake, because Domino's a badass. And I like Domino. I've always liked Domino from afar. I don't know much about her as a character, but I've always liked her appeal.
With Ciron, yeah.
Yeah. She was in the Wolverine X-Men cartoon. I really liked her there. And, of course, you know, Hope is apparently going to be part of this book, which I didn't expect at all, which I liked. Three best moments. That moment, the Havoc telling Cap to stand down, and then Cap telling him, stand down. So, yeah, that wasn't a good call. I thought that was pretty funny. And then, of course, there's a point where Hope finally tracks down Cable. And, another funny line where Dr. Nemesis' Omega-level temper tantrum, get down now, which I thought was crazy. And, you know, Hope is, like, doing telekinetic shit. Like, she's going to throw things. And it's like, Cable's just standing there. And she goes, it's like, what, are you going to say something? And he says, I miss you too, kiddo. And he just hugs her. I'm like, aw. This is not really his daughter, but, you know.
Might as well be.
Paternal father. And I thought that was a really good moment between those two characters and that. Even if you weren't, say, invested in this relationship since, like, they've been together since all those years ago, you got a sense of what that relationship means. And I got to say, I don't think I've ever told you this, but I secretly, like, love Cable as a character. In that he's like the mutant Nick Fury to me. In that he's, you know, he's basically the veteran, old, just going to take names and kick ass and do it my way no matter who gets in my way kind of character. And I've always liked characters like that. And apparently something's wrong with Cable's arm, I guess. I don't know. Hard to tell.
Yeah, he needs like the apparatus or something to like function
it. Because it looks all like skinny and stuff. It looks disgusting. But anyway, so Cable is that, and he assembles his new X-Force team. They're caught permitting a terrorist attack with Colossus, who hasn't joined the team yet. And so basically they're on the run. And I've overall really enjoyed this issue. Salvador LaRocca, I think, you know, just like with Iron Man, he's built for a book like this with the big tech and the big guns. And, you know, he doesn't reuse the same panel over and over again. Everything looks great, everything looks crisp, everything has a unique look to it. You know, I look forward to a long run with these cast of characters. And I look forward to picking up issue 2 of Cable and the X-Force. A complete contrast to the X-Force book I was reading before. But let's go to the other guys. Brian.
Yes.
What did you think of Cable and X-Force number 1?
Well, Ben, as you rightly know, myself and you have had extensive experience with an X-Force. And clearly this is not it. We'll be getting a second X-Force later on, which probably still won't be it. But this issue, I try not to judge it too hard, but it's pretty good, you know? I don't mind it. hopeless. His writing is you know, it's up to standards, and Larova's art, I don't hate it, which is good. But everything strikes me as more kind of like blue-ish, I guess. There's a lot of blue in this issue. That being said, I did enjoy this book immensely at certain points. Like, I did enjoy the little interaction between Havoc and Cable, because you forget that he's technically his uncle. So it's like, you know, it kind of throws you for a second. But then, and then there's that bit with Hope and Cable, which was nice, admittedly. But one thing that kind of confused me was that when she went searching for him and then she was brought in by Domino and stuff, I don't know, it just, they kind of left it at a decent place at the end of, I think it was Consequences? Yeah, it was Consequences. At the end of the Consequences miniseries, they left it in a place where, you know, Cable promised that he was looking out for her, and she seemed content with that, and then they kind of parted ways. And now all of a sudden it comes
back.
She's
also a teenage girl who's like, fuck it, I want to do this now.
Fair enough. You know, I can't really argue that point, but I don't know. It struck me as odd that all of a sudden she becomes like super duper pissed. I mean, maybe this is a month later. Giggity. That being said, though, Dr. Nemesis.
We don't know what happened to him yet.
No, we don't. But Ben, I think you put it best when you said, said your bit, which is
Cable skull fucked him.
Oh God, Jesus Christ. I really don't want that to be the case, man.
Well, maybe it's just a gas mask. Because, I mean, if you were, maybe, because we're going to find out where they ended up into becoming terrorists. So maybe, as a precaution, instead of wearing that, you know, the typical medical thing over his face, I don't know what the technical term for that thing is,
yeah.
Mask, and, you know, he decides to go, because if Forge is there, a high-tech version of it.
Yeah.
It just happens to look really strange.
I miss the fedora, though.
Well, fedoras aren't really practical for big tech missions.
No, but it looks badass.
Yeah, well. He's anyway. Funny. I remember liking Dr. Nemesis when he was on Uncanny X-Men.
He's very snarky, very sarcastic. Yeah.
I like him as a character on, you know, with a surrounding cast of people. I didn't pick up that whole mini or maxi or whatever it was that they had, the way he was like a focus, one of the primary focuses of it.
X-Scientist is what you're thinking of, I think?
Yeah, or some shit like that. Like, I don't know if there's enough of him there for him to be a primary focus, but within the group, I think he's great.
Oh, of course. Brian, you have anything more to say?
Let's see, Mr. Fedora, skull fucking. I think that about covers it. Although I want to ask where the fuck Forge has been this whole time. Like, did I just miss him, or did he just kind of reappear all of a sudden?
Because he wasn't on. I don't think we've seen him in Utopia at all.
No.
Yeah, I know. Last time I think we saw him was like in the Age of X miniseries a while back.
Forge is one of those kind of characters who just pops up randomly all the time.
Whenever the writer needs a supposition, hey, we need a big thing. Let's get Forge.
Forget about, not because he's bad or anything, but if he didn't fit your story. But I'm glad he's back, because it's almost, with the exception of the upcoming Colossus and also Dr. Nemesis.
I'm interested in how Colossus winds up with the team.
This is pretty close to the old school Cable and X-Force.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah, which is,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I made the mistake of saying they're bringing the 90s back to my LCS guy. He literally picked up X-Force and showed me the cover and was like, put it in my face, and it was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. Shoulder pads and...
Oh, I love it. God. I love that X-Force. Oh, God. Cable, like, I fucking love it. He's ready to kick your ass.
Jesus. Fucking Liefeld, man. To find a genre, but...
Yeah, I bet you Rob Liefeld's not too happy about this book being out. That's for sure.
The fact that Dennis Hopeless could do it better than him.
Well, he's a more talented writer.
Yeah, he is.
Going by his Twitter, he's not happy about a great many things in life. We're all happy that he's not writing comics right now.
Oh, so. Writing or drawing having to do with comics, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Arnold, what about you? What did you think of Cable?
To be honest, I did not pick this up in the store this week because I was iffy about it. But I did like the first issue that I read, and I think I'm going to come back and read some of the others. Excuse me, I'm still coming down off my cold. I'm not sure how I feel still about Cable's new arm. like, I don't, maybe it'll be explained in the story, and I'm sure it's holding a lot of firepower and everything, but does it really need to be that much bigger than
Yes, because it's so awesome.
Much more bigger than his arm, almost like walking around with a whole other body as your arm. So, I do want to see it do more than just blow things up. While that is cool, I hope it does have more of a purpose, and they've mentioned the fact that
maybe it has a grappling hook.
Maybe, right? I know they mentioned, it looks like a giant, did anybody watch that cartoon on Cartoon Network Generator X?
I think I saw like one episode.
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces.
His arm looks like that, like that kid can make both of his arms that giant, and that's what it constantly reminds me of. So maybe that's kind of just stuck in my head, and maybe that's what's ruining it. But they did mention about the fact that his eye is missing, and that used to be where, you know, Cable channeled a lot of power, if I'm not mistaken. So that's gone now. I wonder if that's leading and has a lot to do with these, what seem to be telepathic visions that he seems to be getting, the distance or how far yet to be determined, as we've seen in this first issue. But I like the groundwork that they laid out. As you guys said, I do enjoy Domino when I see her. I forgot how much I missed her in X-Force. After, you know, because she was one of the first people in the aside, not necessarily Liefeld's run, but in the revamp back when Chris Yost was writing. Gosh, that seems so long ago. She was part of that core team, and I liked her on this team, and I'm glad that she's back and in the mix of things. And her introduction was perfect, you know, with her powers and how, you know, the whole luck or chance, whichever you want to call it. And she's just on the phone, zooming through things, you know, getting through stuff. Obviously, just from where Hope ended up, maybe Hope took out some people ahead of her, but it was still cool to see how nonchalant she is about stuff while she's doing all these dangerous, kind of crazy, undercover Black Ops type things. It's definitely got me intrigued for the next one. I'm curious to see what brings Colossus into the mix and where it goes from there.
I want to see how the Phoenix Force affected him.
Affected?
Colossus.
Oh, Colossus.
Yeah, because, I mean, we've already seen the other X-Men have been somewhat negatively or positively affected who were touched by the Phoenix Force.
Right.
So I'm wondering, Colossus looks pretty normal, so what
I'm assuming happened? The Phoenix Force also erases the what was that power that he had?
He was the Gem of Sidorak that was Juggernaut's key to power.
So wasn't that revoked by him? Was that revoked, or was that just...
He had both of them during AVX.
Once he got the Phoenix Force, though, it, like, left him, because he had the Phoenix
Leave
Force.
Leave him eventually? Because I missed that. I don't know if it happened in one of the side books or whether that was one of
no,
my questions.
No, because, I mean, it looked pretty clear, just in the AVX book, like, once he... it wasn't, like, explicitly explained, but he goes into the fight on the moon with the, like, the Juggernaut armor, the Sidorak armor, whatever it's called.
Right.
And then after the Phoenix touches him, he's normal looking, so I would assume the Sidorak power leaves him.
I'll have to look back on that. Check.
I guess I wonder if that means we'll be seeing Kane Marco again sometime.
So, but yeah, it was good times. It's going back to the 90s without going back to the 90s, so to speak.
Jesus. Not like
cheesy writing or like butt kicks. It's just, you know, a book with big, like I said, I was looking for big tech with big guns.
Yeah.
And if you're not into that sort of thing, that's fine. I need a book like this. I need at least one book like this,
right,
to satisfy that fill.
It's got me interested for where it's going into and how the Uncanny Avengers team, because of course they showed up right in the beginning being led by his uncle, how they're coming into the mix, and I'm sure they're not quite too happy about anything going on, judging from what happened.
What the fuck, Nate?
The normal terrorist attack.
Your dad just fucked up the world, now you're doing this?
Yeah, seriously, like, who showed up, brought this daughter here, disappeared or, you know, passed out, whatever the case may be, or got healed, as it were, and then your father decimated almost the entirety of the Earth and killed a mutant leader, so to speak, or a guy who's made leaps and bounds with the mutant-human relations, and now you're doing this kind of bullshit. It's a total, dude, what the fuck's wrong with you? Have you not been paying attention?
Oh, he pays attention. He just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, and that is Cable. When Cable's always done his own thing. He's always been stubborn.
That's why I like him. He's the mutant Nick Fury. That's what he is.
More sense, you know? I know we hate Hope for being stubborn and pissy and obstinate, but when you look at it, take a moment and look who raised her. Are you really that surprised that she came out the way she did?
By the way, I just love Domino, like, standing off to the side, waving like a dejected school kid, like, hi, Nate.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Now,
I will give this a nice middle of the road 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I'll go that.
The bad guy, the things that are attacking, those things look familiar that I cannot remember. That
go
sort
back
of
to the issue.
The fuck.
Technarchy.
Yes, the techno something, whatever.
Technoarchy or something like that. Whatever that.
If Taser was here, he would be able to tell us what they are.
Yeah, he knows that crazy bastard.
Yeah. So, yeah, which I thought like, wow, they're bringing that back. So you know, and that, I think that's tied to Cable. I could be making shit up right now. I don't fucking know.
No, it's tied to that guy on New Mutants. That little.
Yeah. That's why I recognized it from. Like, oh, that looks familiar.
Like Warlock.
Yeah, Warlock. That's it. The guy who passed around with Cypher.
Yes. So, that thing. Yeah, so pretty much Cable and the X-Force is pretty much okay or not pretty good.
It's good. I mean, you know.
Let's see where it goes from here. What's the long-term game plan of this book? Let's see where it goes. All right, well, let's move on.
It's techno-organic. That's what that is.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to our individual reviews. From one Marvel Now book to the next, Brian is going to review Avengers Arena number 1.
You missed the Battle Royale reference.
That joke is so
This one
old.
Is dedicated to our fiercest follower, W.
Did you see that there's a cover for issue 3 that's basically the Hunger Games logo but with the Avengers
Will you
Arena
let me level? Fucking talk?
The cover to number 1 is the cover art for Battle Royale, which this has also been referenced as.
You're
they know
right,
what
but
they're doing? They're purposely
yeah,
homaging these things.
I don't know, which is why I didn't pick up the secrets of that because I just don't care about these characters. Maybe extra 3, but go ahead, begin the bloodbath, Brian.
Okay. Well, like I was saying, this one's dedicated to our fiercest follower, most loyal listener, W. West. We love you, guy. We know you love us. Okay. So, Avengers Arena. Like you guys said, this is pretty much just a blatant ripoff. There's no real hiding it. I mean, there's a whole, like, giant murder world, like, landform arena set up, which is pretty much just, the arena from fucking Hunger Games. There ain't no way around that. And then Arcade shows up. I love this. He's literally wearing a suit with his hair down and a rose in his lapel. Anybody who's seen The Hunger Games? Oh, it's a blatant ripoff of Snow from The Hunger Games.
Is it really?
Dude, it without a doubt, it is just a the only thing he's missing is the giant beard coming down and the age. That's it. He could pass as Snow without a doubt. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Look, it's one thing of doing what's hot. It's another thing when blatant copying.
It's blatant.
But
it's unbelievable.
The Hunger Games is blatantly copying off of Battle Royale.
Yeah, it is, but still, give me a chance to rant about it, because it's fucking crazy. I'm just going to rattle off the list of competitors we got here, because some of them are from Avengers Academy, others are, I really don't know what they're from. I really think Taser would have been better suited to review this had he been here. There's Kid Britain, Darkhawk, Nico, Reptil, Nara, Apex, Cammy, Anachronism, Bloodstone, Chase, Riker, Justin, X-23, Hazmat, Metal, and Red Raven. Those are our list of competitors for this Hunger Games. The book opens with Hazmat running through the jungle, her suit's kind of leaking, and she gets jumped by X-23. And Hazmat pretty much blows her face away with her nuclear energy or whatever. And then, oh my god, she's... X-23 is just this flaming skull coming at her, you know, claws, and she pretty much knows she's gonna die. There's no winning against X-23, you know. It's Wolverine. You can't beat that. But what we get is a little homage, like a little vignettes of, like, characters from Avengers Academy and outwards just kind of going about their business. And it's set up that, what do you call it? All of the faculty at the Avengers Academy, or at Tony Stark's Christmas party, which I'm sure is a blast. And so they're kind of left to their own devices, and then they all simultaneously get picked up at once and brought to this murder world type deal. And then Arcade, he says this. Let's see. There are 16 of you here right now. You're completely cut off. Nobody's coming to get you. Trust me, they wouldn't know where to look. You want food, you want water, medicine, it's all here, but you'll have to fight for it. One way or another, in 30 days, only one of you will walk out alive. Got the idea from a couple kids' books I read in the pen. Teenage superhero deathmatch, killer be killed, it'll be great. So he's referencing Hunger Games as the inspiration for this deal, which I guess is kind of a breaking the fourth wall towards the creators referencing Hunger Games.
Wow, that's again, I understand homaging something. I understand the concept from similar something. It's another thing to acknowledge in the book that we're doing this. And
he got the idea from a kid's book.
Yes. Wow.
like Hunger Games, and again, Battle Royale, and Lord of the Flies, and a bunch of other kids' books that you could reference that this could also too.
I know, you're defending
Battle Royale
as
a kid's book, really?
And it wasn't even all that great, because I know like three of the characters in this book. I just hate the fact that people declare that it's a ripoff of one thing, when the one thing they're saying it was a ripoff of is a ripoff of seven fucking other things, too. So why do we bitch at one ripoff, but not at the other ripoff?
Because we're comic fans, and that's what we do.
What we do, dude. Anyway, moving on. So Arcade kind of gives him the quote-unquote orientation to this thing, and he lets them all drop to the ground, and they pretty much all stand around arguing over who gets first crack at the guy, who wants to kill him first, because he's just standing there around these guys. And what we get established here is that he pretty much has said it so he cannot be injured while he's inside the arena. He's immune. He's a god, essentially, in this arena. And this, I guess, goes on for a long time, because the first person that takes a crack at him with his godlike powers is Hazmat, and she gets knocked pretty far off into the distance. And then her boyfriend, I guess, from Avengers Academy, Metal, the red-skinned, steel-looking dude, says, he punched you like a quarter mile. So, within the context of this, let me just frame this for you. Hazmat gets knocked away, and the kids and the dude are still talking. Metal goes and retrieves her, brings her back. So they pretty much walk half a mile, and they're still just standing around talking to each other as this goes on. I'm not sure if that's a good decision, because it kind of feels like, oh, what are they doing just standing around for? You know, I guess he's kind of playing the fear game, but regardless. Pretty much, Arcade decides to inspire them to get into the mood by setting an example, and the first example is Hazmat, who he decides upon. He asks if anybody understands or if anyone wants to, take her place. Nobody volunteers, except for Metal. He volunteers saying he's the weakest link, and he gets exploded all over the place. Like, he just goes pop like a balloon. Like, oh, it's brutal. And the look on Hazmat's face, priceless. She looks on like, what the fuck just happened? And it ends with pretty much Arcade just saying, welcome to Murder World. And thus begins Avengers Academy.
Murder World sounds a good place.
Avengers
to go
Arena.
To. Take your kids.
Yeah, really. Bring the wife and kids. They'll love it. Let's see. The art is actually very, very good for what it is. I mean, it's bright and colorful, which is kind of weird given the circumstances, but it's very well thought out and very well pictured, so it helps to set the tone a lot. I give the artist credit. Kev Walker, he gets kudos for that. Dennis Hopeless, he writes good dialogue, and he does. It doesn't hurt. I just wish the plot got a little further along in this issue. I mean, it's your standard setup issue for your typical miniseries, but I really wish we had seen more of what was going to happen in the first issue. But, we'll get, I forget how many issues this is running for.
Well, it's an ongoing, so I guess as long as they can persist it.
Ongoing? No, this has got to be a miniseries, right?
No, it's ongoing.
Seriously?
If not, the worst they can do is, they can end at issue 12 and do Avengers Arena 2, number 1, and do it all over again with new characters.
How many people did he take?
I think it says, 16. Yeah, 16 kids.
Over the course of 30 days, right?
Yeah, right. Something like that.
That can be expanded out a long time.
Yeah, I guess.
To me, the ultimate shine of this book potentially could be the character development between these characters and how they react in this these teens, how they react in this live-or-die situation. And what
X-23's killing them all. Game over.
Yeah, really. That's how we open the damn issue, with X-23 getting first blood, man.
Realistically, X-23 murders everybody. Like, nobody in that
realistically
group can.
But then
stop
again,
them.
It does have this Darkhawk guy who's actually more of a cosmic. So I was surprised when he showed up.
And
so
there are a lot of twists too. That, like most of those other stories, that it, you know, it's taking elements from. I'm sure the other players aren't the only issues on this world, wherever it is that Arcade took them to, because we know Arcade, the man loves himself some tricks and stunts and hidden shit, so I'm pretty sure that's more kind of what I want to see. Sorry for interrupting into your...
No, absolutely. You know,
I definitely want to see more of the actual arena stuff. That's where things like this become really fun, because, you know,
yeah. We've
seen superheroes fight left and right. Okay, you know, yes, we know there's going to be the emotional turmoil of having to kill people who are potentially your friends or people you could give two shits about, but I always love to see the kind of crazy arenas that these people build to fuck with the contestants.
Yeah, because if Arcade is anything, he's creative, you know?
Yeah. That's where the real fun of this book, I think, is going to come from, is to see what kind of fucked up shit Arcade's dealing with. And I mean, he seems to have a whole other power set going on and stuff, because I don't remember Arcade being...
He's serious the fuck up real.
Yeah, you know, and he pops up here and there. I mean, the last time I've personally seen him in anything was back when I was reading X-Factor, and that was in the early issues. That happened maybe, you know, and then I think he showed up again within the last year or so, so... and those guys usually tend to be the people he goes after, so I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I'm not, you know, decrying it as a book. I mean, it's entertaining, and surely I'm looking forward to it. But I think the biggest challenge is going to be getting us to care about these damn kids, because really, like Ben pointed out, you only know about two of them going in, unless you pay attention to, like, all the teen books, and you're all
about it. That's the thing that sucks, is, like, for a person who, like, doesn't know any of these characters, and they get invested in it. Oh! Stabbed through the gut. Oh.
Yeah, see, I never read Avengers Academy.
Is a character named Cloud9 in this book?
No, it wasn't listed.
Oh, okay.
Who's that?
No, there's a character from the Avengers Initiative book. I was wondering if those characters made in it, which made me care about it a little bit more.
Yeah, I know the Runaways characters for sure. I know X-23, of course. I know there are some characters that are in the book, period, that nobody's seen before, that none of us know, because they haven't shown up anywhere to the best of my knowledge. Some of the Captain Britain Corps being some of those characters, I think.
Yeah, there's Kid Britain, who's, I guess...
Yeah, so that we just don't know, period. But as far as it goes from the Avengers Academy students, I don't know any of them at all. I've seen pictures and covers with them on it, of course, but I have no idea who they are for me to get attached to them. So give me reasons why I should care about.
Yeah. That's going to be the biggest challenge in front of Hopeless. At least, I mean, we're not going to be able to care about all of them, but try and get us to care at least about some of them. Like, you know,
because somebody's going to survive.
Yeah, someone's got to win. It's a Hunger Games. I mean, it's Avengers Arena. Yeah.
It's Battle Royale. Let's kill the fat kid.
As much as I rip on it for being, for taking one of the things, what doesn't take from everything here or there? You know, you really got to look past. You can look past it, and I think once it kicks off, like, for real, all the action starts, it'll be a really, really fun book. So, you know, I'll give it a solid, I'll do what I did with Cable. Give it a middle of the road 3 out of 5. Because it is a good read, you know?
Issue 2 comes out this week.
Yeah, I know.
And, of course, let's move on to the next book, which a book that's critically acclaimed quietly that nobody seems to talk about, but that Brian and I know – not Brian. Arnold and I know is really awesome. Ultimate Comics X-Men number 20. Tread spoilers lightly, because I will be picking up this issue later next week.
Try to spoiler lightly, you said?
Yeah, not too – like, if there's, like, a big revelation, I don't want to – like,
okay, I'll keep it as –
buzzkill.
Spoiler-free, pseudo-spoiler-free as possible. So, as we now know – during the whole, all the craziness that has just gone down with the divided we fall, united we stand, et cetera, we are now at part 2 of Reservation X. As it stands now, there are only 20 mutants left in the entirety of the U.S. We have a hard number, unlike the 616 universe that can never seem to get the exact number right as to how many mutants are left after M-Day. We know here that there are 20. That's it. Not sure what the breakdown is, ratio male to female. It seems like they're female. But they are now all, with the deal that Kitty made with Cap, they are now living on a reservation that kind of pretty much was just kind of used to do atomic testing and things like that. So they did, of course, as does happen with our mutants, get the shit end of the deal. But it's a deal nonetheless where they supposedly won't be persecuted. They're a nation unto themselves, as it were. They've been given some minimal supplies to deal with and have aptly named the area that they live in Utopia. There was a bit of a struggle of power between a girl named Nomi, also going by the name of Mach 2, and Kitty Pryde, who we know as Shadowcat, although she doesn't really go by Shadowcat in this book. It's just always straight up Kitty Pryde. So they're dealing with all of that now, and the big question that's going on is how they're going to sustain themselves and life and things like that with this arid, unusable soil, and them not being able to get any kind of moisture or temperature or things like that to create the necessary components for storms to be able to make rain, things of that nature.
Oh, so she can't just summon rain?
It doesn't seem like it in this. And I forget.
I could have sworn she did that in the past.
Right. I forget what Storm's power set was like because it's been so long since I've seen her.
I assume it's different because it's the Ultimate Universe, but you never know.
Right. And I think it also just might happen to also deal with the air and the atmosphere surrounding that area. You know, you've been setting off nukes and stuff. The ground and the soil aren't the only things that are going to be affected, you know.
Could be, yeah.
The air and things like that are also going to be equally as fucked up because it's just cycling through soil and et cetera, et cetera. We find out that Nomi has had Warpath go in and steal the gun that Nick Fury had given to Kitty Pryde, and we don't know exactly why she's doing that yet, but will be revealed a little bit later down. We see Kitty kind of having conversations with Jimmy. It's safe to assume at this point that the two of them are together, and they're naturally having a discussion, just running down everything that's been going on Utopia, who's setting up what, how's this going, things like that. A man by the name of Sam Smithers, who goes by the codename Blackheath in this book, has been doing testing on the seeds and the soil and seeing what can possibly be used for them to create, vegetation and things of that nature. But he has discovered, the soil itself has changed and kind of adapted to the surrounding areas that it's in and has taken on all these different properties. They plant a couple of different ones and within minutes they're sprouting new buds, vegetation and stuff that they can deal with in this greenhouse that they've created. So they come across this discovery and they decide, of all things, to call up Tony Stark. And he shows up and he's like, this is it. You just brought me here to show me seeds. You guys are going to have to do a little bit better than that. And they show them, well, these seeds that you're looking at now that are sprouting brand new buds, we planted 5 minutes before you got here. It's like, all right, now that's something more interesting and more up my alley and something that I could be intrigued in. He mentions to them about Tony Stark housing agriculture and stuff, and the mutants decide that they want to provide it to the world absolutely free. Which, this one, it's essentially a magic bean of seeds, as it were. You plant these wherever, however, and they will, you know, latch onto the properties out of there and create actual proper life and vegetation and things of that nature anywhere. So you can see how that'd be quite the, commodity in the U.S. So to help with this, you know, Stark says, fine, you know, Cap vouched for you guys, I'll help you out here and there, and says, but I'm gonna have to leave a little muscle behind, so to speak, and he leaves behind the Iron Patriot armor. No word yet on who it is or who's piloting it, or where that's coming from, and I'm sure we will find out about that soon enough. We then cut to Kitty and James Howlett, or so Logan's son, as it were, having a conversation, and while they are sleeping, the gun that Nomi had Warpath steal, Kitty wakes up to that gun pointing at her head, and Nomi's like, what's the point? I mean, Kitty says to Nomi, what's the point of this? Why are you doing this? Do you know as soon as you fire the bullet, I'll be able to phase right through it? And right after she says that, the gun moves over to a sleeping Jimmy Hudson's head, and Kitty cries out, and as soon as Jimmy wakes up, the gun's gone. So again, the struggle for power is very quickly, I'm sure, going to escalate into some serious business going on. But it was good. I like the direction that this comic is going. I haven't enjoyed the Ultimate X-Men for a really long time. You know, even before the Ultimatum stuff came in. But essentially, a lot of the stuff that led into that and then Ultimatum and onward, I just couldn't be bothered with the X-Men. But this, it's a different a different take on the persecution. Like, this group, they really are pretty much at extinction level. There's 20 left out of the entire population. All the rest took the cure, thinking it would be easier that the government provided, so they would no longer have to be persecuted. So, I never saw Kitty as a leader that much, at least not at the age that she is now in this. She's tops 18, 19 years old. So it's interesting to see her in a leadership position, have people looking up to her, and all the ways that she's taking this team, and how she's going to have to deal with some dissension amongst the ranks and those that are staying with her, because, I mean, really, they have nowhere else to go, and those that really want to kind of take charge and go back and attack the humans, which will start a whole flurry of drama all over again. But this issue, I will give a nice 3.5 out of 5 for this one.
Man, I really can't wait to pick up those issues on Christmas, the day after Christmas, you know. Ultimate X-Men just seems like a really good book right now, and I want to be in on that. So I want to be all up in it. But last but not least, we rarely talk about trades on this show. Not because they don't allow us, because we're too busy talking about the books that come out that week, and, you know, a lot of Marvel stuff. But this week, like I said, I only had one Marvel book, which was Cable and the X-Force. So I went and bought a used trade, which is called Captain Britain, who's it by? Alan Moore and Alan Davis. I think this is the first Marvel book written by Alan Moore that I've ever talked about on the show, because I know I've talked about Alan Moore before in one of my diatribes. Anyways, basically, here's the story. Captain Britain, Brian Braddock, as you know him, is trapped. He has been summoned to another reality by this white-haired mistress who's the Majestrix of the Omniverse, silly as that sounds, to help stop this her Earth from some basically self-destructing. There's this thing, and they don't know what it is, that's basically ripping reality in half. Like, it's tearing things, days turn into minutes, sort of like Final Crisis, but much more psychedelic. And it turns out it's the mastermind behind all this is this character called Mad Jim Jaspers, who's a mutant. He's a mutant reality warper, and we all know how fucking dangerous those people can be. And in the process, in this reality, this Mad Jim Jaspers was elected as Prime Minister of Britain, who then outlawed superheroes and created this, it's not symbiote, it's cybiote, which is basically this machine of death that only thing it knows how to do is kill superheroes. Basically like Nimrod for the Sentinel, you know, like a Sentinel, but it kills superheroes. It's killed every hero except for Captain UK, which is that Captain Britain's parallel self. And she's basically fucking wrecked. Like, she's too scared to put on the costume. She saw everything she loved die before her very, and she couldn't do anything to stop it. So Captain Britain is on this search to try to stop it, and he fights the thing, and he loses. He basically dies within the first couple of pages. And Merlin, who, as you know, Arthurian legend, sort of like that, Merlin resurrects him body, mind, soul, and spirit to fight the cybiote, to defend him against cybiote, because the cybiote... I'll get to that in a second, but so Captain Britain is then summoned to the center of the Omniverse, which is these group of people from delegates of other Earths that basically guard the Omniverse, which is the multiverse for all intents and purposes. And the woman who failed to protect the Earth that we saw at the beginning of the story is on trial for not preventing it. And the guy who's trying her is really secretly trying to usurp her for power so that way he can become the new Majestrix. So you have that going on. And meanwhile, so they escape and they get sent back to their Earth. And Saturn, that's her name. It's like Saturn, S-A-T-U-R-E-N-Y-E-N-E. And Captain UK. And they all start to realize, they all see signs. Everything that happened on that Earth that they were just on, that at the flick of a switch was destroyed by the court judge, is now starting to happen here. There's a guy named Jim Jaspers who's calling for the outlaw of superheroes. There's the cycle starting to repeat. And meanwhile, the cybiote is out there in empty space that doesn't exist. All it knows that it's hungry. and that it wants to it needs to destroy Captain Britain. Because even though he saw Captain Britain die, he killed it, he saw it, looked at the vitals, he's still not convinced it's dead. So you have reality. Now reality starts to warp, starts to change. Captain Britain, like all superheroes, are outlawed, and it becomes the final push to stop Captain Britain. To stop Jen Jaspers, who then turns. Basically, this story is a big fucking psychedelic trip of cosmic fun, and it's Alan Davis, and this is like not Alan Davis we've seen in the recent. This is like early '80s Alan Davis. Amazing. There's some double page spreads of just like, what the fuck are you talking about? Kind of pages. It's so simple. And of course, it's in that sort of Alan Moore voice of looking beyond the Silver Age things of comic books. Like, there's a point where like Captain Britain and them are fighting, and like they're explaining situations. Like, doesn't that ever sound silly whenever you say something like that? Like, nope. And then they start fighting again. It's wonderfully trippy, not in the bad kind of way. It's wonderfully cosmic. It's wonderfully big. It's immense. A lot of things writing. And Betsy Braddock is actually in this. You know, she's the brother. She's the sister of Brian Braddock, you know. And so they're in there. And it fit everything that I wanted. And it had great victory, great sense, great loss, great art, great story. Everything about it was just, you know, I never knew that they had collaborated together, and I never knew they worked on Captain Britain. Nonetheless, the only thing is like the first couple of chapters, because these were reprinted at Marvel UK, and I would imagine like as part of like a second feature kind of thing, you know, and like the print in the first one's kind of like really small. You kind of have to squint a little bit to see it, because I guess the magazine was smaller. That's the only way I can rationalize it. But you know, overall, like I was pleasantly surprised from like, and it proves to more that I'm just Alan Moore's bitch when it comes to anything he does. Cause I don't think I've hated anything he's done at all. At least that I've personally read. So yeah, if you like big trippy cosmic stuff with, you know, reality changing and great characterization and great, even greater art, you need to find this. You could probably find it used, or like on Amazon or something, but yeah, it's just called Captain Britain. By Alan Moore and Alan Davis, you know, two of the greatest Alans of all time. So yeah, I don't think any of y'all have even heard of this story, right?
Nope.
Oh, y'all should check it out. It's good. So yeah, Captain Britain. Well, you know, the only thing this book made me do was made me wish that there was a Captain Britain, either a miniseries or an ongoing. Like, I want that to happen now. Will it be the same quality as this? Probably not, but I would like it. You know, Captain Britain fits that superhero, cosmic, magical kind of sense. All three things into one, you know? It'd be a great thing to capitalize on. Plus, who doesn't like Britain? I like Britain. I like the Union Jack flag. It's awesome.
Traitor!
Whatever.
USA!
Technically, I'm a... whatever.
USA!
Whatever. Captain America, suck it.
Fuck you too, then.
Anyways, so that's all the books we're going to talk about. But before we go on our two-week hiatus, okay, let's not dance around it. Apparently, some people in South America predicted, or Central America predicted, that the world is going to end on December 21st, 2012, which, if you look according to your watches, and if you're listening to the future, you know it already passed, this Friday. At the time of recording. So basically, I decided, okay, if the world is going to end and we are not going to make it, and if we were going to see the world end any kind of Marvel style, you know, what would you want to see? What events would you like to, would you prefer, like, okay, fuck it, if we're all going to die, it might as well be the Kree invading and the Kree and the Skrull fighting and turning Earth into a big gateway jump thing? Or is it going to be Galactus showing up? Or, you know, the world being turned into or Apocalypse taking over? Or Kang or Ultron submitting everybody into psychic or notes? So I'm going to go to y'all guys. If our world's going to end this Friday, how would you want it to go out?
Thanos turns the cosmic cube into an infinity gem and sticks it in the gauntlet. He goes to work to keep that shit.
Brian?
Times.
Yes. I always found the, what was it? It was the story where I think it was like Frank Castle was the only guy left out of like a few people, and he was just offing people.
Punisher versus the Marvel Universe?
Yeah, and I'd like to go out just watching Punisher slay people. You know, that's a pretty decent ending, you know. Granted, it's a bit man-made, but hey, you know what? Most trouble is man-made, so I wouldn't want to have to kick back and just watch him incinerate shit. But following that, I mean, if we're going cosmic here, that's a tricky one. I guess if I had to pick one, like, gun to my head, Galactus, I guess. Classic, you know, classy way to go out. You know, can't really beat getting your planet devoured. I'm just not really sure. It's kind of, I mean, it's a good question.
Fun apocalypse. It not necessarily destroying the whole world. If our whole world got sucked into the microverse, got stuck there.
That'd be fucked up. What are we going to do now?
We gone, but we're, you know, not really in the best of spots.
No, like, hey, we're alive. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd rather be dead. Yeah, you know what? Getting trapped in the Age of Apocalypse would not be fun.
That would suck.
You know, I mean, like, well, if we got trapped in America, we would be fucked. But if we got trapped into, like, in Europe, where apparently everything was fine, I think we'd be okay. We just have to move to Europe. Get out of America somehow. What about I have a fear of water, so if Magneto decided to reverse the polarities like he did in Ultimatum, I would be shitting my pants. And like the whole like a lot of the world just got covered in water. I don't live too far from a coastal city. I know y'all are like right along the coast yourselves. So
yep.
That would be a pretty horrible way to not go, because you wouldn't even see Magneto. Maybe on the television, but I'm trying to think of another moment that, like...
Well, you kind of listed them all at the very beginning. You kind of blew every shot we had out of water.
What about, like, having the Beyonder come and, like, just say, everybody fight to the death, as Earth is literally blowing apart because he wants it to. Like, that would be pretty fucking spectacular.
Perhaps.
And his 1980s Jerry Cole-esque look. Jerry Cole, because he had Jerry Cole.
You know what else I'd like to see? I would like to see, what do you call it?
Darkseid?
No, not Darkseid, but,
Man, would you shit your pants if you saw Darkseid in real life?
Oh, yeah, but that's distinguished competition, man. We can't be going to DC. What's it? Pretty much any universe in which versus, you know, Marvel Universe versus or versus the Marvel Universe, you know, where the heroes and villains kind of turn into raving, you know, mad, cannibalistic. Because, you know, the beginning was kind of weird to see. It was almost like a dissenting thing, and then it turns into, like, all-out combat. You know, that'd be interesting to see. You know, I'm not really big. I mean, dramatics are fine, but, you know.
Would you rather be enslaved?
Yeah, perhaps. Oh, Marvel Zombies. I'd go for that.
I'd totally be down for that.
Why?
Hells yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
Marvel Zombies, man. Watching Spider-Man chat down on some little kid? I'd watch that.
Then he comes chat on you. I think you already said it, Brian, but I'm going to just say it again, is seeing Galactus come down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, like...
Not Spark Cloud, neither.
No, I'm talking about, like, the, you know, the full-on guy... Or humanoid, because he's not a guy, technically.
Right.
I'm trying to think of, like, seeing the Phoenix raise everything wouldn't be too bad of a sight. It would hurt, it would be hot as hell, but I don't think that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You know what would be horrible, though, if the Red Skull got a hold of the Cosmic Cube and he turned all the world into Nazi Germany?
That would
suck, yeah.
The apocalypse there.
Yeah. Trying to think. Oh, Surtur from Thor invading. Yeah. That wouldn't be fun at all.
Oh,
it'd be cool.
What was that giveaway comic? The one with the snowy, like, New York becomes, like,
covered in snow and shit, and it's, I think it's Ymir, is it doing that?
Ymir.
Yeah.
That's the king of the frost giants.
Cask of Winters kind of deal.
Any more sort of, like, if Earth is gonna die, what do you want to see this week?
The Chitauri!
You would have been like, Thanos just shows up. Oh, like, wherever you live, Thanos is just there.
Right.
In all his, like, 8-foot tallness. Oh, you know what? What if it's the Hulk who just destroys everything?
That'd be kind of cool. I mean...
kind of fun. Takes forever.
Then how did he do it? Like, we talking like Maestro here, or are we just talking like...
No, I'm talking about just like pure rage Hulk who like just shows up out of nowhere on Friday and just starts wrecking everything. Like, you can't stop him. Because literally nothing in our military would be able to stop something like the Hulk.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, also, the one from a while back, The End? The one with all The End books?
Yeah.
Those would be cool to see.
Like Hulk The End, where like everybody gets eradicated but him?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the other End books. What about, you know what would be cool that I would also, Dormammu invading in his flaming head. Through the dark dimension, like, I will devour all of, not, that's Galactus.
Yeah, and then Doc Voodoo can come save the day.
You mean Doctor Strange.
Cause Doc Doctor Strange, man. Fuck him in his stupid mustache. Doc Voodoo had dreadlogs, okay?
Oh, yeah. That makes him urban. That makes him cool, apparently. So, I'm trying to think of, I would like Ultron would be fun for all of 5 minutes until you realize what he's actually doing. And you're like, oh, this isn't gonna be fun.
Yeah, really.
You know what? I know this isn't Marvel, but I would not want to live in Gotham City in The Dark Knight Returns. Something like that.
No Man's Land?
Yeah. Like, everything, the world just, like, technically, it ends only because, like, everything we live by ends, but, like, we still live, and so we have to live, like, in the shattered remains of an old civilization. Like, everybody just has to start killing each other for survival. That'd be horrible.
Perhaps.
What about Wolverine killing everybody?
Are we talking like enemy of the state here,
no,
or
no,
what?
Like X-Force, like they go on
They kill everybody? They go police state before they go that.
Well, they put us in a police state. Would you really want to do that? Be a part of that?
Not really. But then again, it'd be like, what was that movie that pretty much was the same premise? The Minority Report?
Yeah.
Is that it? The one where they like, take people before they commit crimes and shit?
Oh, yeah. That was Minority Report. Free time.
Okay, yeah. It's like that, then.
Yeah, but would you want to live in that?
No, not at all.
I mean, technically, it's the end of the world as you know it, and it's a new world.
I feel fine.
Ha! Me to it, you bastard.
Yeah! In your face!
I'm trying to think of any other Marvel big events. Because I think seeing aliens wreck over everything would be pretty generic.
Oh yeah, but it's always classy. Because then you get the resistance built up. Maybe you can fight back a little bit. But if we're talking total annihilation,
if we're talking about Reaper level sort of thing, yeah, they fuck. We're dead.
Yeah. Now we should go for something, you know, bombastic, like what we saw in the first Marvel Ultimate Alliance game with Doom just taking Odin's power and being just fucking
just wrecking everything.
Yeah, he snaps and just destroys everything. And I'm pretty sure there was a what if where he took the Beyonder's power too, so that'd be pretty fucking scary.
Any more guys? Because I prefer either Galactus or Age of Ultron submission. All right. Well, I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's about it.
All right. So hopefully we survive to December 21st, 2012. I swear to God, if I wake up to go to work that day and it's like cloudy and I hear thunder, I'm like, oh fuck, we're not making out of this today, are we?
gonna be awesome. It's gonna be nuts. I can't wait to see it on Pro.
But Facebook's gonna be so fucking lame that day.
No, if it's like, but if it's like sunny and, you know, nice, I'm like, oh, look. And then like, when I go home, it's gonna be all like, doom.
That's what it should be like. It should start off like the brightest, clearest, happiest day, and then the heavens should just open up and shit on everyone.
Like, hey, I got this for you.
Everybody having fun, and that ends now.
Yes. it's like God is like trolling you. Like, are they good? Are they good? All right, let's pull it. And then the seven seals break and everything.
Well, Satan had to steal from somewhere. Might as well be God.
Yeah, well, God's the biggest douche there is. God, he's the biggest bitch of them all. All right, well.
You don't fuck with God, son.
I was making a South Park reference.
I know, and I was making, I think it was a preacher reference.
Oh. Well, you don't, because God is a huge prick in that book.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that concludes our last show of 2012. We hoped everybody liked it, despite it being taserless. You know, unfortunately, forces beyond his power and did not allow him to be on the show. I do a baseball podcast with Kuhan called Birds in Space. We talk about baseball, and apparently he wants a divorce already. We'll talk about the next coming episode. I haven't released it yet. I don't know, but Brian and I sat down, Mr. Dragon, talked about the games, the gaming year of 2012, and our major disappointments, our games of the year, our surprises of the year, our handhelds of the year, fighters of the year, sort and such. It's a very long, lengthy discussion, and of course, Brian getting mad because when Mr. Dragon interrupts him.
He was being a douchebag. He deserved what he got.
Twitter.com/Warriors3PCast, Facebook.com/Warriors3Warriors, I don't fucking know. Warriors3@gmail.com, I'm a professional. And if you're curious, we will be doing our best and worst shows of 2000, best and worst show, the first episode of 2012, 2013. Do our first, then, therefore, all the comics can come out, especially the ones where like a bajillion books come out this Wednesday. So. Look forward to that. If you've already been on the GLC message boards, you've pretty much already seen what some of my choices will be, but there's still some surprises left in store. Y'all have anything to say before we depart 2012 ahead into 2013?
First and foremost, happy Christmas Hanukkah Kwanzaa to everyone out there, and of course, Christmas for the rest of us.
Hell yeah, man.
Enjoy all of your holidays, ring in the new year. I'm sure we'll be here within the week of the ball dropping on 2013. Upward and onward, as it were. Hopefully bigger and better things in the future for us Mighty Warriors 3 podcast. Another, how many years have we been doing this, guys?
Our first year, we got together in the winter of 2009, and our first show was released January, like the first week of January of 2010. So this, we're heading into our fourth year.
So almost as long as I've been living at my apartment in Queens. Yeah, because I remember I didn't start that till I moved here. So here we go. Only better things to come, guys. Definitely going to try this time around with all, now that all the revamps and reboots craziness are over, maybe we can hopefully get some guests on this show now that people aren't too psychotically busy and super secretive.
We should get Rob Liefeld.
I can make
that happen. It's not like he's doing anything.
Do it! Oh,
you can make that happen, go for it.
All right, I'm going to do it. All right, no promises, but all right, the first, if we can get him, we'll try to get the world-famous Rob Liefeld on the show. All right, well, Brian, do you have anything to say before we leave 2012?
A few things. One, this is the year we officially became better than CoreCast. You guys can suck it!
We became better and surpassed them in every single way.
Hells yeah. Suck on that, biatch. Second thing is just, you know, it's been a hell of a year. It's been crazy. I know Taser wishes he could have been here. I'm sure he does. And, you know, you'll hear from him next year, probably he doesn't die before then. That
pretty
would
much
be bad.
If we don't all die.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, you know what? It's the end of the world. Bring it on. I'll go out Mad Max style. Just whatever. Also, just Excelsior. Yeah.
All right, well, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, long live the Jews, see y'all next year.
Deuces.
What a bright time, it's the right time to rock the night away. Jingle bells.
gliding in the one horse lane. Giddy up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle up around the clock. Mix and a mingle in the jingling feet. That's the jingle bell.